This Memorial Day, click into cordless power at the Home Depot. Tackle your yard cleanup with the precision and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt expanded cordless string trimmer. Then power through the heavier debris with more than an hour of runtime on the Ryobi 40-volt cordless battery blower. Right now, you can get either one for only $159 each. It's time to click into Memorial Day doing at your cordless power source, the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Welcome back to another episode of Letarte on Location. Interesting location today. Interesting guest. We're actually at a Waffle House in Cornelius, North Carolina. I'm going to let the guest explain why we're at a Waffle House. My guest is CEO. You know, it's funny. I knew all my guests. You're my second now, Doug. But as I Google them, their titles are impressive. So Doug Dukart was the COO. Now I'm talking to the CEO of Roush Yates Engines, Doug Yates. Doug, welcome to the pod. Good luck. That's what I'll tell you before we start.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you for having me on, Steve. I'm glad to be here at the Waffle House in Cornelius today. This was my dad's favorite place to eat breakfast. Actually, they have, after he passed, they put his picture on the wall here that remains. And there are a lot of people that come to the Waffle House and send me shots.
Yes, I can imagine. I was just here the other day with Phil Parsons, and he's like, we got to send one to Doug. So for the non-NASCAR guys, his dad, Robert Yates, so he's in the NASCAR Hall of Fame, engine builder, race winner. We're going to cover Robert Yates Racing because I have a tie there. My dad worked there. It's funny. So your life and my life, I won't say running parallels, but, man, they touched a lot of times over the last two decades, still continuing with your children, father of four. So I think first let's start in the present. Roush Yates Engines, CEO. So help the fan. What does the CEO of an engine company do?
Well, so first of all, you know, like you were talking, I mean, my dad was an engine builder, and I grew up in his footsteps here in Charlotte, North Carolina, and decided I wanted to be kind of like my dad, so I followed him into the engine business, and we'll talk about Robert Yates Racing and where that started and where that went. But in 2003, my dad, Robert Yates, and Jack Roush decided to put their engine companies together to merge.
So just for the record, when that came out, when the two Ford engine shops were coming, I was at Hendrick Motorsports at the time. I was like, I think Jayski posted it first. I was like, they're wrong because they don't like each other. So there's no way they're going to work together.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth to that. Jack and my dad were fierce competitors. And when you ran the same brand, you wanted to be the top team for that manufacturer. So there was as much competition in the Ford camp between Jack and my dad as they would race Rick Hendrick, right? I mean, they wanted to beat each other first, and then if they beat Rick, that was almost bonus, which sounds really weird, but that was how competitive it was. But finally, we got together, Ford Motor Company, Edsel Ford, and Dan Davis at the time said, hey, guys, we think that you're the only two Ford camps left, only two Ford engine builders left. We think the landscape's changing. Why don't you guys get together? And so at the end of 2003, my dad and Jack and I went at Atlanta Saturday during practice. We went over and tapped Jack on the shoulder, and we went to his motorhome, and we sat and talked about forming this engine company. And we didn't know the name of it. We didn't know how it was going to go. All that really came out of that meeting was that Jack looked at my dad and said, I don't really like you that much, but I like Doug, and I'll do it with him. So all that said, we the next week at Rockingham, Jack and Matt Kenseth clinched the championship. I got in the airplane, flew back to Livonia, Michigan with Jack that night. He dropped me off at the hotel, and the next morning we started formulating a plan of how we're going to put our engine company together, how many people from his shop in Michigan we're going to move down to North Carolina.
Yeah, because his stuff was based totally out of Michigan.
Yeah, it was based in Michigan. That was a desire. He wanted to get to Mooresville and get to one location. But get this. I mean, they just won the championship. He asked me to fly up there with him, and I got to pick the team, his championship-winning engine company, which guys get to be part of the new team. Not such a great task for day one as my new role as CEO. But when we put the company together, you know, and this is how the name came about, is that my dad and Jack are born on the same day. They share the same birthday, April 19th.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But Jack is 1 year older than my dad.
So he gets first billing?
So he got first billing.
I like that.
That's how Roush Yates came, because some people say, why was it Yates Roush or Roush Yates?
Right.
And that's why it's Roush Yates, because Jack was 1 year older.
See, that's what this podcast is all about, the stories no one knows. And I would challenge, you know, it's easy to look back now in 2019, but to think that vision almost two decades ago, when you look at the landscape now, what Toyota has done. So they took the engine model one step further, right, took it out of the team's hands completely, and almost the technology as well. So they, and then Ford kind of, I think, has followed that a little bit. You look at Chevrolet, not so much, with two separate engine shops. My opinion, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, my opinion is that's part that's hurting Chevrolet is just their approach. I feel that it's not as concise as the other two manufacturers. I'll be the first to say I don't know why. I don't know the business model, nor do I want to. But so it's amazing, two decades ago, right, that the Blue Oval had this plan to kind of put this all together. So,
yeah, a lot of it was we were looking ahead and saying, hey, what is the engine?
Right.
What's an engine shop look like in the future? And
when you say engine shop, it's just not Cup. So you have Cup. I was great. You were nice enough to offer me a ride home from the IMSA testing, which was nice. I was down there. I got to cover IMSA. So you're in IMSA. Been there for a long time. I thought it was relatively new, but you said you've been down there for years with IMSA.
Yeah. Ford got us into – my dad and I into road racing in 1999. We built Don Panos' engines and actually went over and raced Le Mans with a aluminum short block, short deck version of our current race engine. So a pushrod engine. It was really cool. We qualified third overall, and that's kind of where it started. And when Jim France changed IMSA over, kind of took control of the series, changed the cars, we won the first event there with Multimatic in 2003. And then we've won the Rolex 24 four times in total, 2012 with Mike Shank, and then three times with Chip Ganassi. So, but that the road racing piece is a lot of fun. I mean, you learn a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, it's
that garage.
Oh, it's so
the it's cars, like a car guy's dream, right? Oh, like, man. I walked around there, I was drooling. I thought, oh, look, there's the Porsche, and there's the Lamborghini, and there's the Ford GT, and there's the Corvette, and they're all there.
One of my favorite races of the year is the Rolex 24. I mean, you go down there, the cars look like cars you can buy at the showroom if you can afford them. They're expensive cars, but they sound great, they look great, the racing is fun. We were down there, you had me on your broadcast. There's 19 different manufacturers of that race. It's a great way to showcase your technology and really a production-based racing, so that's important for our company. And out of that, we've learned a lot on just engine, different types of engines, engine mapping software, but primarily the people that we have brought into the company have broadened our company, made us a stronger company. So it really complements where NASCAR is going in the future. You know, when NASCAR brought fuel injection in 2012, you know, we already had those skills and expertise. So it wasn't something new to us as a company. But we were looking ahead, looking where Toyota was going, looking what we thought it should be. And we formed Roush Yates. And so they wanted to give me a title. And they said, hey, why don't you be the CEO? And I had no idea what that meant. But funny enough, we were at the dinner table with my daughters last night, and they have a little slime company that daughters.
Yeah.
And Olivia says, I'm CEO. And so –
twin daughters.
Yeah.
So is this the same thing that they go by who was older? Like, how do they decide this?
No. I think Olivia is the authority of the
I think
house.
That's fair. Knowing the twins. So when I mentioned that Doug and I's paths cross, so it's not just on the racetrack, off the racetrack, two twin daughters, four children total, two sons, two daughters. My daughter's a year older. You wouldn't know it. It's so many stories from actually my last win at Martinsville. They had to sleep over in the motorhome. So I've known the twins forever. So that's she's definitely the CEO.
Oh yeah, and we made your book. And
yeah.
That was...
Oh, listen, it was we our families have crossed a lot. So before we leave the race team or the engine provider, because I want to go all the way back. You mentioned Jim France and NASCAR. I'm of the opinion that I love that they have all these properties now. They're trying to align as an engine manufacturer. That must be exciting for you, right? They have ARCA, two K&Ns. I know the engine rules aren't all consistent, but much like a driver, you guys have to look to put your products kind of throughout racing. I mean, that's the goal.
Yeah, well, first of all, the most exciting part about that is just Jim France. I mean, he is really taking control. And
if you can get him to talk,
yeah.
Great guy, doesn't say much.
He, you know, his brother – Bill Jr. ran the NASCAR side of things, and he ran the road racing and the motorcycles and things like that. But, you know, he's really stepped up and taken the reins and is at every single race, and he's there available to talk, like you said.
Oh, yeah.
He's a man of few words, but he's a great guy, and he really is passionate about the sport. And I believe whether you you know, owning my own company, I have to be present. I have to be passionate.
Right.
I have to be the leader, set the tone for my people, and lead, and they cue off of me, right? You know,
absolutely.
If I'm in a good mood, they're in a good mood. And if I'm excited about something,
you gotta
they get excited
about
it.
Be careful, because when you're having bad days, it kind of goes through the whole company.
There's a filter you learn over the years. Sometimes that's why you have competition meetings on Tuesday, not Monday.
Yeah, so you could sleep in, reconvene a little
so
bit.
So you can take a deep breath. But Jim sets the pace for NASCAR right now, which is great. And he has a great vision. And I think it's an international vision.
Right.
It's not just U.S.-based. And so that gives us a lot of opportunities. And I think the future of NASCAR, the Cup Series in particular, and the future Xfinity and truck is in good shape.
Listen, I love it. I remember the day he came into the booth. I think it was at Michigan when he kind of first showed back on the scene, and he tapped me and Jeff Burton on the shoulder and kind of introduced himself. We were like, oh, no, we know who you are. Thanks for coming by and speaking to him. But that's good. Well, that's the now, but I want to go all the way back, because one thing – I did Google you. I went through this thing, and I already knew this, but I guess it never struck me. So in 1995, I joined Hendrick Motorsports as a 16-year-old floor sweeper. Doug, which, first of all, I didn't know Doug was your middle name. All these years, didn't know Doug was your middle name. I didn't know you were Robert Doug.
Douglas.
Robert Douglas.
James Douglas.
Okay, James Douglas.
My dad was James Robert.
All right, and you're James Douglas.
And my grandfather was James Clyde. So
all right, so the James is consistent. I like that. Yeah. I like that. This is a very important stop right here. More coffee. Thank you so much. But then you went to college, which obviously I thought about going. I took the test to go. Actually got approved a couple places. Ended up not going. What, you know, a young Doug Yates going to – you know, I've told these stories, right? Your dad used to come home for dinner and then go back and keep working. I mean, that was the drive and the desire he had. He would bring you back there. At what point, A, did you know you were going to be a racer, and then was that before or after you decided to go to college? Like, how did that all transpire?
Yeah, it's probably –
What I really want to know is, did Carolyn make you go to college, or is this your choice?
No. The college was ultimately my choice, but this is a good lesson for dads out there or parents out there is my dad, like you said, he worked all the time. I mean, that's just what you did, and you know, racing was it's a passion.
Yes.
You know, it's you have to love it to be able to try to make a living doing this, or you're not going to make it.
Right. It's a great living, but the living will never come if you don't have the passion to do it. You're not clocking in and out.
It's all consuming, and we're in a sport, and it's a competition, and therefore, if you're not working, somebody else is working. That's what my dad always – that's what he believed. So I always helped him growing up. He let me tear down engines, wash parts, I got an opportunity to hone my first block when I was 13 years old.
That's a big day.
It was great. So he always wanted to prep the parts, machine the parts, and he taught me to do those things. But the key moment, the key deciding moment for me to go to college was my senior year. The summer in between my junior and senior year, we had our own engine shop. And so it was out at the Speedway, and my dad built engines for five teams. One of them was Rick Hendrick, and Gary Nelson was a crew chief.
Yep.
And so that summer, we worked 7 days a week, you know, 7 to 9 or 10, Monday through Thursday, 7 to 7 on Friday, 7 to 5 or 6 on Saturday, and then after church on Sunday. And so senior year, you take our senior picture, I'm looking at all my buddies, and they have tans, and they came back from the beach, and I'm white as a sheet. I'm like, I've got to figure out how to make a living.
I don't know if I could do this.
I don't know if I could do this. Maybe I want to go to work for Ford Motor Company Motors. So I'm going to – I applied to NC State. Fortunately, I got accepted. And I'm off to college, man. And in college, you know, I went to a public school here, East Mech, here in Charlotte. And I did great.
It
was easy. You know, get to NC State. This is real stuff.
You have
to study. And there they had the freshman chemistry test. The freshman chemistry test was on Saturday morning, and it was by design.
Oh, boy.
And so the very first one, I didn't do so well. Mm. It was 22 questions. I got 11 right. And it was
That's a good batting average, but not a good grade.
Right. It was a moment that said, man, I'm not going back home. I'm not going to fail. And I really buckled down, and I learned how to study. And the one – key moment at NC State is there was a professor there, Dr. Joe David. He's not with us anymore, passed away several years ago. but he had a grant from General Motors.
Okay.
And he did valve train research for Junior Johnson. And so we became really good friends, and he really helped me understand how to apply engineering into racing. And that was a turning point for me. And so that was really helpful. And then the next big moment for me was my junior year in college. My mom called and said, hey, we're going to buy this race team, and we want you to come to work for us. And so after that, I knew my sights were on going back to work for the family business after I graduated.
Right.
I graduated May of 1990. On a Friday, came home, had a little graduation party my parents threw on Saturday, and Monday morning we were working on going to try to win the Charlotte World 600.
Well, so I think now's the time we're going to dig in. We're going to come back to a name later in this story, Jeff Clark, because I think you guys met in college. Is that fair? Was it before college?
We met in 10th grade.
Okay, so that's a name that if you know Doug, they're like Batman and Robin. They're never really too far away from one another. So we'll get into Jeff. Jeff's a great character and smart guy. But talk about Robert Yates Racing. So purchased in 91. So I'm what I've learned about people like you, Doug, and other people is they won't – not many will toot the horn of the accolades of their family or their area. But I will say, you know, I don't think looking back in time we can ever – it's hard to determine what created a company, what made it work, right? Richard Childress Racing won all the championships with Dale Sr. Rick Hendrick had some success but then found Jeff Gordon, who then found Jimmy Johnson, and this is where we're at now. You know, Robert Yates Racing, though, it was a bumpy – 90s when I look back at it. Success wasn't the question, but it was just a lot of other things. So created in 91, full-time in 92. Is that accurate?
So my dad bought the team in 89.
Okay.
So after that summer that we worked so hard, Rick Hendrick called and said, hey, would you come to work for me? This was the summer of 85. So graduated in 85. So that summer. And then Ford Motor Company called and said, hey, would you come run Rainier Lundy Racing?
Yep.
Waddell Wilson's here now, but he's moving on.
This is the who's who of NASCAR.
Yeah, so Cale Yarborough was the driver. So they're running a partial schedule. So my dad decided to take the Ford opportunity to go run Rainier Lundy Racing. So they finished out the 86 season with Cale, and then they had a choice. Who are they going to put in the car? And my dad always – him and Bobby Allison were like this, you know. In 1972, they worked together at Junior Johnson's,
right.
won 12 races, finished second in the championship. They got together at DieGuard 1982, and then 1983, they went on to win the Cup Championship. And so all along, my dad saw Davey Allison coming along, and he had built some ARCA engines for him and things like that. So my dad was really quick to say, hey, let's put Davey in the car.
Right.
And they said, well, I don't know. We got this guy, Rusty Wallace, that we think might put in the car. And my dad said, no, I think Davey's the guy. And so they went with my dad's recommendation, put Davey Allison in the car. He was a rookie, 1987,
mm-hmm.
set on 5 poles.
Oh, yeah.
Rookies.
Yeah, went into the Hall of Fame this year for good reason, right?
His
pace in the car, his charisma out of the car. I mean, it. We could sit here and talk forever of why he's a Hall of Famer. I think it goes, but tragically,
1993 passed away. Yeah, it was after the
Still driving for your father at this point,
yeah.
Right? Still driving the 28, the famed 28. It was 90. What year? Let me get my years right. So 92, he finished second to his dad.
88, he finished
at the 500.
Yeah,
1988. Oh, so I'm years ago. 88, he finished second to his dad in the 500.
Yeah, so that was the second year they were together, and like you said, we had some good years, but not really sustained success.
Right.
So, my dad bought the team in 89. I graduated in 1990. We were kind of still
figuring it out.
Yeah, we were fast, but not real steady.
Yep.
Jake Elder was our crew chief. And then when Larry McReynolds came aboard in 91, man, business really started picking up.
Mm-hmm.
We ended up winning 5 races that year. 1992 season as well documented with all the, you know, the final race there at Atlanta where Alan Kulicki won the championship. Bill Elliott won a race, and Davey, we crashed out. But we had an incredible year, lots of ups and downs. But that was really 1992 is really what put Robert Yates Racing on the map.
Right.
With Davey Allison. And then 1993 was Davey's last year. We won the first Richmond race real early in the season. Remember how cold it used to be there at Richmond?
Yes.
We won that, and then we struggled. We weren't just hit and miss, and then we got to Loudoun in July. We had a great race, led laps. We actually broke a header.
Mm.
probably cost us the race. Rusty Wallace won the race. We finished third. We flew home from that race, and, man, you remember being on flights when you're really excited about you think you're really getting it figured out.
Right, right.
You're moving in the right direction. And then the following Monday or Tuesday, he had his helicopter accident at Talladega with mm-hmm. Red Farmer was in the helicopter, and Red got out. Davey didn't make it. And then that was that changed the complexity or changed our lives.
Absolutely.
It was a moment like, do we even want to do this anymore kind of moment.
Yeah, because when you look at Davey's numbers, and I use Davey's numbers because they're so well documented, but they run parallel with your dad's team, right? I mean, the amount of wins in so few of starts, there's really no telling. You know, you can't tell, right? You can't predict. You can just say that was quite a course. He was on quite a course to win a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So, and
you heard guys talk about it at the Hall of Fame. I mean, he is not only a winner and it was going to be a champion, his charisma. I mean,
well, that's what I think about. So when I look at the 90s, right, I am a little later than you, so I'm late 90s. But what Jeff did kind of redefining the driver role in the corporate sense, you know, Davey had all of those makings, right? Maybe not as California polishes Jeff, but in his own way, which I think makes him unique, right? Right, is he was very different than Jeff, but had the same ability, I think, to move the needle out of the race car. So that changed the complexion, but the story would have ended there, right? So you replace Davey with, to finish out the year, who drove the car?
Yeah, so we had several people drive the car.
Because multiple people, right?
Yeah, we had Robbie Gordon drove the car at Talladega. Kenny Wallace drove the car for us.
Mm-hmm.
Lake Speed drove for us. All of those guys did a great job. But Ernie Irvin was a guy that was really getting it done. I mean, he won a Daytona 500, was fast every week. And
I've always heard the story. So he was driving for Morgan McClure, and I heard the story that he was good friends with Dave. He wanted to be in that race car.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody wanted – back then, there's – you know, through the years, there's always that car that everybody wants to drive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the 28 car was that car that everybody wanted to drive. So we got together, and we – it was at Bristol, the night race, and he and my dad were talking, and he said, when do you want to
– Yeah, when can you get
start?
In this thing, right?
But first you got to ask the sponsor. And so we called Texaco and said, hey, Ernie Irvin's available, and they said – you know, when you measure anybody up against Davey Allison, that's a tough
bar. Yeah, the sound needs to be, listen, we can't replace him. But we do have to have a driver.
Exactly. And they said, well, are you sure? And I said, we're sure. This is the right guy. Well, he's not all the things that Davey was,
right?
And
good luck. You're not going to find that.
We put him in the car at Darlington for the Southern 500, and we ran, like, fifth or something like that, fifth to seventh. And had a really good start. And then the third race out at Martinsville, we won the race.
Right.
The Texaco guys were like, that we knew.
I've learned. One thing that's consistent, it doesn't matter if it's NASCAR, NHR, IndyCar, Formula One, winning fixes everything. If you're winning races, everyone's happy.
Absolutely. But the cool part about that deal was that Ernie got out, and on his own, he pulled his uniform down, tied it around his waist, and had Davey Allison T-shirt on.
Mm-hmm.
That was a really great tribute, and it was actually good healing for my dad,
right,
Larry McReynolds, and the whole team, because, you know, the great drivers are the team's hero.
Exactly.
When you work for
that
team, you'll do anything for that guy because you know he can get it done. You're going to do your best, and that's the way Davey was, and that's the way Ernie was.
Well, it goes back to what you said about being a CEO, right, and it's not from what they said. Right, like the great drivers that are heroes, it's because of everything they do. It's you'll go fight in the pits with them because you never doubt on the racetrack what their goals are. You know, it's just, it's like their charisma, their aura. They're like great drivers. They when they walk into a room, they change the room.
Yeah, and the best pressure in racing is when you have a guy like Davey Allison, or Ernie Irvin, or Jeff Gordon. You know, if you don't win, it's not them, it's the car, it's the engine. And that's the best pressure you can have because you know that is a known. When you walk out there on the starting line, your guy can get it done. You got to give him what it takes.
Yeah, it's the best and the worst thing to have in racing is a guy that can push the pedal down. So Ernie takes off like a rocket, and then unfortunately, well documented, right? He was, he had to be first or second in points. I mean, right up to the near the top in the points when he had his big accident at Michigan.
Yeah, 1994, we were winning.
Well, so make sure, before I get to the accident, he was 10 laps away from winning the Brickyard, right? Flat tire with 10 to go, 8 to go, isn't that accurate?
Yeah.
Somewhere in there, because everybody knows Jeff Gordon won the race. I'm not taking anything away from Jeff, but I'm a historian. I like the whole race. I remember three things about the inaugural Brickyard I remember. Jeff Gordon winning. I remember the Bodine brothers running into each other consistently. And I remember the 28 car looking like it was going to win it and had a flat tire late in the going.
Yeah, I remember being there for that race, and it was such an incredible experience. I mean, I can't even describe to people how much of an honor it was for NASCAR to go there.
That's what I think people lose, is I remember walking underneath a sign that said Gasoline Alley as a kid, and I thought, I didn't think I would ever have – I was a NASCAR guy, so this was never going to happen.
The most incredible part is when you walked out on that starting line Sunday, and you could look to the right and left, and there was just people as far as you could see wrapped around the stands. I've never seen anything like it my entire life. It's just – it wasn't – I remember that more than the race, to be honest with you. It's just the experience of being there, and then what an incredible place to race, and all the history, and just being part of that. So we felt like the 24 was the fastest car. I mean, we gave him a run for his money. At the end of the race, I believe we had a tire go down, probably ran over the strips, and we're getting a little too aggressive on going for it. But we were in
the race.
That's
the politest way to say. So as a crew chief, I'm going to interject what he means here. So this is how it works. You get too low on air, and you sometimes fail a tire. But it's like the pot of cookies. It's like a jar of cookies right there. So if you're like a fifth-place car, and you take a half a pound of air out, now you're a third-place car, you take a half pound out, now you're a second-place car. But finally, at some point, you say, well, we didn't come to run second. So you finally get too low. I've done it. We've all done it. So I'm glad to know there was perhaps more to the story. But, yeah. Fast, though.
Oh, really fast. We were fast every year we went to the Brickyard with my dad's cars. And we won it twice with Dale Jarrett in 1996, which we ran first and second with Ernie and Dale Jarrett. That was so much fun because Todd Parrott was Dale Jarrett's crew chief, and he was scanning Larry McReynolds and Ernie, and he comes on the 28 channel and says, go get them, Catfish. And they said, Todd, you're on the wrong channel.
That's outstanding.
It was a great day. You know, it was a great day for our company. You know, our teams are so competitive. We didn't give each other hugs because the 28 guys wanted to win. The 88 guys did as well. But that was a really special moment. And to think about it, you know, people talk about kissing the bricks all the time. And our team, Dale Jarrett, started that tradition. And that's something I'm really proud of. And like I said, my dad loved – when he retired, there's a couple places he really missed. Like on Sunday morning, he'd wake up and he'd really miss it. And the Brickyard was one of those.
Oh, I know the number one. We're going to talk about it now. I was fortunate enough to win it in 2014 with Dale Jr. It was always special to me, but never until I won it did I know what the Daytona 500 meant. I've walked around Roush Yates, and you have all these checkered flags, but the frames are different on some of them. So explain. Every checkered flag is up, and they're in silver frames, and then the Daytona ones are in gold. Is that accurate?
Yeah, so we when we started Roush Yates, we said, how are we going to celebrate a win? You know, and different people buy trophies or hang pictures. And we kind of got in a little bit of a deal. Who's going to pay for the trophy?
You know,
that was kind of how it got down to the CFO level discussion. And like Jack said, okay, let's just make this easy. We're going to give you the checker flag. And so every race that we've ever won, we have the checker flag from that event or a replica checker flag.
You're going to need a bigger building. I've been there. It's running out of room.
It's been an amazing run. And so throughout the building, you know, is the checker flags from the wins. A race is a black frame.
Okay, black frame, yep.
And then the Daytona 500s are in gold because in our sport, the Daytona 500 is our Super Bowl.
It
is the biggest race. And as growing up as a kid, my dad loved the Daytona 500. I caught the bug. I love the Daytona 500. It's one of those crowning moments. When people talk about your career, they're going to talk about how many championships you won, and they're going to talk about how many Daytona 500s you won.
That's it.
And then because
you win the Daytona 500, you are the Daytona 500 champion.
That's right.
Like, it's not just a race win. It's a big deal. So we move from Ernie to Dale Jarrett, end up a two-car team. This is kind of where I show up on the scene. So I'm Jeff Gordon's tire guy. I'm living with Jason Burdett, who is Dale Jarrett's tire guy. And I remember one day at New Hampshire, I wish I could tell the year, we were running – So we battle for a lot of wins. But there's this one day we weren't even battling for a win. We were like, I don't know, fifth and sixth. I don't know, fourth and fifth. And remember, for years, you used to go to the Snoco pumps. If you didn't win, you went to the Snoco pumps, put fuel in, you go to the scales. So I leave the pits with like five to go. I'm the tire guy. Jason leaves with about five to go. We start walking together down pit road going to the Snoco pumps. We're running like fourth or fifth and sixth. And I can't. I don't want to get the details wrong, but so this is a guess. I think we moved the 88 with like three to go.
I
moved DJ, and they dry and all of a sudden his radio goes off and my radio goes off, and I look at Jason and say, "Hey, listen, if we fight, I'm just going to push you down. We're going to roll around a little bit because we're not much of fist fight guys." But we get to the pumps, and here's 6 foot something Dale Jarrett, and he is going to whip the crap out of Jeff Gordon. And Jeff, you know, for a little guy, thought he was 8 feet tall, so he was giving it right back. And that basically was like, welcome to my life. I went home and shared a house with a competitor, went to the racetrack. Dale Jarrett and Jeff Gordon had some toe-to-toe battles.
Man, we had so much fun racing each other back then with I don't think people talk enough about Dale Jarrett and how competitive he is. I mean, what made him a special race car driver? It was his will to win. His competitiveness, if you've ever played golf with him, if you ever played cards with him, if you ever hung out with him, he is the kind of guy that wants to win at everything he does. And when he doesn't do that, he's pretty fiery. I mean, he is very competitive. He's Gentleman Ned's son.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But when you get him right, and it takes a little bit to get him fired up, but there's moments where I've seen that come out at him, and you know it's in there, and that's what you loved about racing with him. But I remember that day, and they were yelling at each other, and that's what people love
about NASCAR,
right?
Right.
I mean, they want to see some, you know, bump and runs.
Well,
and
as a fan, so I'm a big baseball fan, right? I love that the Red Sox hate the Yankees.
Right.
I mean, I don't hate them as people, but on the field, I hate them. I don't want them to ever score a run. That's how it is on NASCAR. It's the same way, right? Is you should cheer for your guy up and down. You said Gentleman Ned, so this is a quick interjection. I think it was Cale Yarbrough. I got to make sure I get it right. Somebody said whoever called him Gentleman Ned is because he hit you on the backstretch so the fans couldn't see. That was the quote. So anyway, we digress. But I like that. But you're right. DJ is a competitive guy. But I was thinking – what year was it? You won, I want to say, Daytona 500?
1990.
Brickyard?
Yeah, so
Coca-Cola too, right? Did you win three of the crown jewels?
Coca-Cola 600. So Dale Jarrett came to drive for us in 1995 because Ernie was out.
Yeah,
so
and everybody remembers DJ winning the first Daytona 500 for Joe Gibbs. Interstate, his dad calls him to the line, but then he leaves Joe Gibbs to come to Robert Yates Racing.
Yeah, my dad and Dale talked.
Was that in Darlington at the Grill House? Is that the story I heard?
Yeah, at the Grill House. And yeah. Dale called me about that. I wasn't there, but they were talking. So that was the end of the 94 season. And they'll have a deal. This is Labor Day, Southern 500 weekend. They, you know, agree on a deal, shake hands, never sign anything. Back then, you just did the handshake deals. And then Dale goes on to win Charlotte in October. And my dad and I looked at each other. I may have been even living with my mom and dad at the time. And he said, "Do you think he's still going to come?"
Yeah.
He said, "Man, I hope he still comes."
Yeah, right.
Because he told us he was. So Dale, a man of his word.
Yep.
He got in the 28 car, 1995, very first time out. We sat on a pole for the Daytona 500.
Mm-hmm.
And we were really proud of that moment. But we didn't have a great year. We ended up winning one race that year at Pocono. But to start the 90, and the end of that year, we ran Ernie some races in an 88.
Yeah, because Ernie had come back from his injury.
Yeah, we ran him at Wilkesboro. He raced with a patch over his
eye. I remember that. Yep.
And ran top three.
Right.
Amazing. The guy can actually race like that. I mean, he's so talented.
Yeah.
And then to start the 96 season, Dale Jarrett and the 88 Ford Quality Care car with Todd Parrott as crew chief, and then the 28 car back together with Ernie Irvin and Larry McReynolds. But we won the Daytona 500 to start the season. Amazing, super fast race car. Incredible day. We also won the World 600 that year, the Brickyard. And we were going to Darlington to try to win the $1 million.
Yep.
And somebody lost an engine in front of us, and we hit the wall a little harder than you normally hit it at Darlington. And that kind of ended our run for the Winston Million. But, man, it was – we did win the Winston Million in 1998 with DJ, but it was an incredible start to that Ford Quality Care car. And that 88 car was an amazing car. Ford actually wanted – they talked to my dad about talking to Dale Earnhardt about driving that car.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, back then everybody wants.
Oh, boy.
And so I think the way my dad tells the story is that he feels like he got Dale Earnhardt a raise.
Yeah, right.
But he told him, he said, look, Dale Jarrett's your the guy. You need – this is the real Dale, and we'll beat that Ford – we'll beat that that Chevrolet and Goodwrench Chevrolet but with this Ford-quality care car, and we sure did.
And
I mean, it was great.
That was some of the beauty of NASCAR, right? It wasn't just the drivers and the teams, but you had these head-to-head sponsors, right? Whether it was Lowe's and Home Depot, GM, Goodwrench, and Ford-quality care, there was these rivaling sponsors, which was made it even better. You talk about your dad and getting raises. So the story goes that – I think you know this. He got me a raise. So I want to say, wasn't Slugger the crew chief? Slugger Labby was the crew chief on the 28, maybe the start of Kenny Irwin's time there. And I was the tire guy for Jeff Gordon, and I think Ray paid me $350 or $400 a week.
The way my dad told it, he wasn't paying you enough.
Yeah. So you know, Slugger was like, hey, you want to do – so I went over to a Charlotte test. I went up in the lounge, and there was your dad and Slugger, and he's like, so why don't you come? So I guess I'm skipping over. My dad probably was there at this time. So I moved south in 94. My dad worked at Hendrick Motorsports. He left Hendrick and ended up at Robert Yates starting the chassis program. That was when you guys started into it, started into the chassis program. So my dad was there. He built cars with Todd. I love it because Todd and my dad, they both have about as much polish as a stone. So when you get them in the same room, it's great, right?
Look, when your dad showed up, when Big Don showed up, business started picking up for us. And back then, everybody, you would just buy your chassis from
Laughlin or Hopkins.
That's right. You just pick one, right? Mm-hmm. And usually you had a crew chief that was a fan of one or the other
understood
it, and that's what you
His
did.
Notes lined up with this one, so just buy a Laughlin car.
That's right. And so that's where it was. Anybody could enter NASCAR. You just go buy your car, put it together. But when Rick started building his own cars, you know, that started a trend. And then we started building our own cars, and, man, it really took off. And when your dad showed up and we started having our own in-house chassis shop, and we started winning a lot of races.
Unlapped at Phoenix. My dad tells, you know, every dad has the story. If he's a golfer, he had a hole-in-one. If he's a business guy, he bought or sold some company. My dad's story is how he built this car. Y'all went to Phoenix, somehow got a lap down, and unlapped under green. Passed the leader, made up a mile, and became the leader again under green.
I can tell exactly how it happened because I was – growing up, I wanted to – back in my day when I was growing up, I know people are going to find this hard to believe, but you used to be the crew chief and the engine builder. Waddell Wilson, Robert Yates, Leonard Wood, all these guys. So growing up, I wanted to be a crew chief. And so I was the engine builder. When I was 23 years old, I was the head engine builder. We only had three people, but I was the head engine builder.
You were the head of the three. I like that.
Right. And so I got my chance to be a crew chief and call a race when – when we ran Kenny Irwin.
Okay.
And so back when he ran the 27 car, we're at Phoenix. Your dad's car was that 88 car. And so it was Slugger and Todd and me calling the race. And they said, just pit one when we
just
pit.
Follow us. It's not
but
this hard.
Being the engine guy, I'm looking at the fuel mileage. I'm like, I don't need to pit.
Right.
And so I'm talking on second radio to Slugger. He's like, just pit. I'm like, all right. Well, we pitted, and sure enough, and we're right down there in the old 1 and 2. As soon as we pitted, I think it was Ward Burton.
Rex.
Just kills the wall right in front of us. And back then, there was no lucky dog.
Yeah, no, there was none of these gifts, right? If you were lap down all day.
Yeah, so here we are. We're all three a lap down, right? So everybody else pits. We're in front of them.
Right. This is back. There was no rave around. So explain to the fans. So it would be the pace car, and then it would be cars. And the leader could be in the middle of the pack. So you were kind of almost a lap down. If he passes, you were a lap down.
Yeah, so we got ourselves.
Those were some great restarts.
Oh, man. So I'm calling a race, and it was, you know, 88. Here we go on the restart. We're ahead. Jeff Gordon was the leader the way I remember it. And here comes, you know, we take off. The 88's gone. We're good enough to hold the 24 up. And here comes Ray Everham, and he comes down to my pit box, and he is pointing and spitting and yelling.
Oh, yeah, that's Ray.
And I'm thinking to myself, I'm done with this crew chief thing. I'm an idiot. Maybe I wasn't cut out for this because I'm kind of a nice guy, and I like to be that guy. So I was like, I don't know about this stuff. But anyway, that day, the 88 went on to unlap himself, drive all the way around, and unlap himself and win the race. And that was one of those deals where you hit a grand slam or you hit a hole in one, and your dad was part of that deal. And And so we decided to take that car after that race and race it at Vegas with Kenny in a ARCA race or something. And I think we ended up killing that car, but which was probably not the right thing to do. But
well,
anyway,
it's easy to look back and say.
But it was an incredible win. It was one of those wins where, you know, my dad had his trophies over there at Hyde Park, and he has a picture from every win and trophies. And when I go through there and I look at the memories of winning that race, or that's a really special one to me because of that and that how good that car was. And since we're talking about your dad, but I think about that a lot, especially when that race comes up every year. You know, you look mm-hmm. at that Phoenix Trophy, and you look at that picture, and it brings back a lot of memories.
Oh, it's funny you talk about crew chief. So I've never really been in many fights in my life, but I've threatened more fights than I could ever remember because you got to be that guy. You got to go down and scream a guy off the pit box. So
it worked.
Yeah, hey, it worked, right? So you were like, I'm out. I'm going to go to the engine shop. So, right, so Robbie Yates then basically the economics of racing, the landscape of racing, major changes through the 2000s for all these different reasons. The engine shop, you tell the story, was created, and that kind of brings us back to present day, right? So now I try to explain to people all the time what the garage – everyone's like, hey, Stevie, why'd you retire? And you said it best earlier, and I can't quote you because I can't remember what you said, but you said basically that you have to lead, right? It's what you do that people see, and it got to a point in my career where I wasn't able to – turn the lights on and turn the lights off, and that's what you have to be as the guy. So the fans that love racing, what is the week for Doug Yates? How many days a week do you take off? Let's start with days, because I think I know this answer.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in today's NASCAR, you're connected all the time.
You're never off. Technology is good and bad.
It's primarily good. I mean, you don't have to be at the track as much. You don't have to be there because you're connected all the time. You know, we have – timing of scoring and links to practices.
Fans as well, right? I mean, they can log on and watch it all.
Yeah, so fortunately I don't – but, you know, from the Hall of Fame, so we went to the Rolex together, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the next weekend was the Hall of Fame and then races. So from the Rolex to last weekend, I think I've went at it every – you know, been working every day. But last weekend I got to stay home and hang out with my daughters and stuff, so that was really good. But you know, we get to work at 6 a.m. and everybody at Roush Yates is so dedicated. The shop is open from 5 a.m. in the morning to 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 every night, and it's Roush Yates is a little bit like it's really a race team,
right?
We just build engines,
mm-hmm.
and that's what I love about it. It's like back downtown when we first had Robbie Yates Racing, everybody just does whatever it takes to get the job done. And there's no real hours. You know, you're there, you're doing it, you're working towards getting that next checker flag on the wall and trying to help win that race. And that's the passion part. And when we interview people for those jobs, whether it's entry level or engineers, tell me a little bit about your background. Did you grow up? Did you race go-karts?
Right.
Did you do the Formula SAE at school?
Tell me what your resume doesn't,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, and just tell me what things that you're into, and I'll tell you if you're gonna be a possibly good fit here, but it's I don't know, it's such an awesome sport. And really what I love about racing, and I was thinking about this driving over here, you know, there's a lot of discussion about this new package and, you know, 550 horsepower as opposed
right,
to
all these rules
750
statements.
But you know, as an engine builder, of course I would like to have more power. I mean, that only makes sense. But What I love as an engine builder about NASCAR is the competition side.
Right.
You know, I wasn't going to make it as a basketball player, a football player, but I get to compete for a living in the sport of NASCAR with the engines.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I like about it. That's what gets me excited, is getting that opportunity to win that next race.
Well, I said this the other day on our TV show, you know, rules are – and they should be discussed. We love passionate fans, but we just relived 20 years of racing – and there's 15 rules packages in there, right? Whether it's the 5 and 5 and 95, whether it's the short spoilers, tall spoilers, long spoilers, restrictor plates, non-restrictor plates. Like, it should always be a discussion because the fans should be passionate about it. But it doesn't change what the men behind the wheel do, or the men behind the wall do, or the guys in the garage do, right? The men and women of the sport will always be. You said it. Your sport's built around people, or excuse me, your company's built around people. The sport's built around people. So I'm going to circle all back around. We're here at the Waffle House. You mentioned your dad. So I didn't realize I was coming here with a celebrity, because you walked in and they all know you. So how many days a week did your dad come here? Like, what's the story?
Well, I don't know exactly how many days.
More than you know, apparently.
But I'll tell you, you know, when we were grew up, you drove to every racetrack, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you would stop and eat at the Waffle House a lot. And so when he retired, this became his favorite stop. You know, he lives down the street here, and he would come here, and I would find him. I mean, we didn't come together
all
the time.
You just haven't run into him.
Yeah, he was always sitting at that bar right there talking to his friends. He had a favorite cook. His name was David. He made exactly his eggs with some cheese in it.
I'm telling you.
And so he loved his place and the people primarily, right? And that's what it's about. But, you know, after he passed, the picture that's on the wall, they presented it to us on Christmas Day. My dad passed October 2nd, 2017. And so they presented it to us. And to be honest with you, Steve, it's kind of hard for me to come here sometimes because just all the memories. I mean, my dad and I were not just father, son. I mean, we were best friends.
Right.
We talked every single day.
Yep.
About
father, son, best friends, business partners,
yeah,
teammates. I mean, you had every label going.
I mean, I'm the luckiest guy in the world to be able to work with my dad for a living. I mean, don't get me wrong. There was days that we slammed doors and didn't agree on
things.
That's
why it worked, because you did, right? I'm a believer in that. If you always agree, someone's lying.
We pushed each other to be the best.
Yep.
The best each other could be. And that was what was so good. And even at the end when he decided to retire – and I think that this is interesting. So he we won our last race with Dale Jarrett, the 88 car, October 2nd, 2005 was our last win. Never forget it. Walking down pit road arm in arm.
Yep.
You know, we hadn't won in a while. Last win for Dale Jarrett, last win for Robert Yates. And he passed October 2nd, 2017.
Crazy.
And it was, you know, things just happen, but it makes you think as racers.
Yep.
You think about those things and those dates, but I'm consider myself so lucky because if I would not have come to work in racing, I would never got to know my dad.
Right.
I mean, at racing, I love NASCAR, and one of the reasons why I love NASCAR beyond the ability to compete every week is what it did for me and my family.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you understand
yeah,
that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you got a chance to work with your dad as well, but that bond and being able to go to drive to every racetrack. I mean, back then we didn't have airplanes. We would drive and talk and make plans. You know,
a lot of relationships were built on a bench seat of a dually.
Oh man, on the way to the racetrack, you're thinking about how you're going to win the race. On the way back, you're figured out how you're going to win the next one.
That's right.
You know, or what went right, what went wrong. But you also get to know people, and you talked a little bit about Jeff Clark, and Jeff's my best friend. We met in 10th grade.
10th grade.
I went to East Way High Junior High, and then we moved across town and went to a new high school, East Mech. And I walked in, 600 kids in my class, didn't know a single person. And Jeff's a really tall.
He's a big,
big guy.
Yes.
He opened his hand up like he does, shakes, and he said, "Hey, you can be part of our group." And that's where we met.
You've never left the group yet.
Never left the group.
Jeff might be the perfect podcast. I might have to get him on here.
But Jeff's dad was in the insurance business, but he was addicted to the thrill of NASCAR.
Mm-hmm.
And so his way in was to be a pit crew member.
Oh yeah.
And so at the time my dad was a jackman, and Jeff wanted to be the jackman, and my dad said, "When you can beat me, you can have my job." And that's how it evolved.
Well, yeah, like I said, Batman and Robin, they're always together. We didn't even get into the pit crew debacle of 1999 that got me over pit road. We'll save that for maybe another podcast. Listen, you'd say it's all about people, all about, you know, NASCAR and the stories. That's really the whole reason I started this podcast. The concept was this, exactly, to sit down, whether it's a beer or a cup of coffee, have a conversation with people that can tell the stories people haven't heard. You've told some great ones today. Doug, I appreciate your time. This is interesting because we're very good friends. We've been very competitors for a long time. Now I'm just a TV guy that talks about your equipment on the racetrack. Congratulations to all the success, to the history. Be proud to know you're carrying your dad's name on with great success on and off the racetrack. I appreciate your time. It's been fun. I think we can officially order breakfast now, though. Yeah. So that's good.
Yeah. We this has been great, getting to tell people stories that they probably didn't know or haven't heard or maybe they can connect with or think about for themselves. But thank you for having me on. And you do an awesome job. And you were – You were made for
made to talk is what I was told. But listen, that's why I love the Hall of Fame. It continues the legacy of the sport, much like all this different digital stuff. So that's another edition of Letarte on Location. It's available anywhere podcasts are available. Download on iTunes. Subscribe, rate, and review. Let us know your thoughts on this podcast. Thanks.
This Memorial Day, click into cordless power at the Home Depot. Tackle your yard cleanup with the precision and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt expanded cordless string trimmer. Then power through the heavier debris with more than an hour of runtime on the Ryobi 40-volt cordless battery blower. Right now, you can get either one for only $159 each. It's time to click into Memorial Day doing at your cordless power source, the Home Depot. How doers get more done.